an animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animal. Talking animal. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest on today's show is Gene Bauer, president and co-founder of Farm Sanctuary, considered the world's first farm animal sanctuary and advocacy organization. And as the organization now marks its 40th anniversary, one way you can assess its influence is by telling all the farm animal sanctuaries that have sprung up in its wake, or trying to tell them all. A notable early element of that four-decade history is that the operation was initially underwritten partly by selling vegan hot dogs from the sanctuary's VW van at Grateful Dead concerts, a relationship that continued over the years. Today's conversation, I suspect, I'll ask Bauer for some reflections on Bob Weir and the place the Grateful Dead occupies in farm sanctuary lore. Bauer himself has emerged as a noteworthy cultural figure, not merely for his role as farm sanctuary co-founder, but as the author of two books and numerous articles. Time magazine called him the conscience of the food movement, and among other attributes, he's an esteemed and in-demand speaker. In fact, Bauer is slated to deliver a talk entitled Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food in Tampa on February 22 at Florida Voices for Animals' 31st Annual Have a Heart for the Animals Awards Dinner Fundraiser. Tickets are still available for that, so if you want to hear Gene in person, there's your opportunity. So we may get a sneak preview of that talk, in fact, but we'll certainly have a good deal of ground to cover with Gene here in just a moment on Talking Animals on WMNF. Programming note, though, in just over 2 weeks, February 18th, WMNF's Winter Fund Drive begins, and we'll be raising money on Talking Animals on that very day, Wednesday, February 18th. Typically assign a giant fundraising goal, especially for a one-hour show, and this year I think it's my biggest goal ever. So I've learned over the years that the only real prospect of reaching a big goal like that is to receive pledges before the Fun Drive show, maybe today. Some of you might consider donating before February 18th. Whatever you can swing would be much appreciated. Just go to WNF.org. In the upper right-hand corner, click on Donate Now. Just sort of follow the prompts. There's a drop-down menu at one point asking which show you'd like to donate to. Please select TLA, Talking Animals, so that our show is credited with your donation. Thank you so much. Coming up later on today's program, I'll speak with Jason Cowan, Executive Director of Friends of Boyd Hill Nature Preserve, which presents its annual Raptor Fest at the preserve this Saturday, February 7th, starting at 10 a.m. Raptor Fest runs till 4 p.m. and offers an array of activities, including photo ops with birds of prey and watching trained raptors in free flight. More on this when I talk with Jason Cowan later in today's program. Right now, though, let's get into our conversation with Gene Bauer, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Gene Bauer back to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals, and congratulations on Farm Sanctuary's 40th anniversary. That's quite a milestone.
Yeah, we're very happy about it. You know, back in 1986 when we started, we didn't have a long-term plan, so it's wonderful to see so much support for this work and that we're going as strong as ever now and looking forward to the next 40 years.
And with the specter of the Grateful Dead sort of hanging in there somewhere, is it reasonable to describe these four decades as a long, strange trip, or is that just too hackneyed at this point?
It's been a long, interesting, and inspiring trip, and we're still on it. And
very diplomatic, Gene. That's good. That's perfect. Right?
No, we're very fortunate to be at Grateful Dead shows, to be part of that community, and also to be supported by Bob Weir and his wife, Natasha. And we were very fortunate also to be at Sphere when the Grateful Dead played there in 2024. We had a table at Participation Row. And so we have a long, wonderful history with Bob Weir and the Grateful Dead.
I was going to explore some of that for sure at some point, because that sounds significant. But take me back to the to the early days. Over the years, you've recounted Farm Sanctuary's origin story umpteen times, and I don't know if you can bear to go through it one more time, but given the anniversary and the tremendous influence you've had, I'm hoping I can ask you to just recall those beginnings, and again, wherever Bob and the Grateful Dead weave in, that's an added bonus as well.
Of course, I'm happy to do that. So back in 1986, there was very little awareness about the cruelty of factory farming, and we felt it was important to shine a light on that. So we started actually visiting factory farms and stockyards and slaughterhouses to document conditions, and we would literally find living animals in trash cans or left on piles of dead animals. So we rescued them and took care of them. And the way we funded the work in those early days was selling vegan hot dogs out of our Volkswagen van at Grateful Dead shows. And, you know, Grateful Dead shows were really an experience, a community experience where people came together, shared ideas. And in fact, our first bumper sticker was an idea that a deadhead came up with. We were, you know, selling the veggie dogs, and we had information displays as well about factory farming to educate people. And one of the guys came up and said, you know, it would be great on a bumper sticker. And he said, if you love animals called pets, why do you eat animals called dinner? And we agreed, and that became our first bumper sticker. So there was a lot of back and forth and shared learning during those concerts and in those parking lots. And that was the fertile ground for the beginning of Farm Sanctuary.
And how did you arrive at the idea of selling vegan hot dogs at Grateful Dead shows to help kind of get things, seed money, et cetera, for Farm Sanctuary's operations? I mean, were you already going to those, and it just seemed like a natural connection to do, and you saw other people flyering or booth set up or whatever? I mean, what prompted this initially?
Well, we've always loved the Grateful Dead, and yeah. Recognized that there was this community around the Grateful Dead that was traveling from town to town that needed to eat. And they were also a very open-minded group. So we felt that, you know, if we could show up at these, you know, events selling vegan hot dogs, we would be able to raise awareness and get people talking about what happens to animals in the food system and, you know, raise some money to help support our work by selling veggie hot dogs. So it was a win-win in many ways.
Yeah. Now, how far did you travel, Gene, to those shows to try to sell the veggie hot dogs? I mean, did you go everywhere they went, or was there certain geographic limitations at a certain point, or...
We were based in Wilmington, Delaware at the time, and so we were in the mid-Atlantic. So we stayed primarily on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. We went as far west as Wisconsin, but it was primarily up and down the East Coast.
Yeah, I got you. So as I understand it, you know, of course, we recently lost Bob Weir, and as I understand it, he was a longtime friend and supporter of Farm Sanctuary. Can you talk about that relationship and or share some remembrances of Bob?
Yeah. So, you know, in the early days, we were just in the parking lots and just part of the community. But in the last 5 or 10 years, we started connecting with him and his family. And for our 35th anniversary in, you know, 5 years ago, I actually interviewed Bob about the work we do. And I asked him, you know, about the whole hippie ethos and the culture and the belief systems. And he mentioned this saying, if it feels good, do it, which was something that was said in the 1960s. And then he sort of reframed that and said, if it feels right, do it. You know, mm-hmm. And by feeling right, that means kind and humane and mutually beneficial to all parties involved. And it was, I think, a really wise reframing of that kind of term. And he also shared how, you know, when he was younger, he actually worked on a ranch and he saw what was happening to the animals. And he said that when people participated in causing harm to other animals, it didn't only hurt the other animals, it hurt us as people as well. So those were, I thought, some very kind of interesting perspectives he shared. And as I said, we were invited as Farm Sanctuary to have a booth when Dead & Company played at Sphere in Las Vegas, and that was wonderful as well. So, and then also going back a little further in 2015, when the Dead were doing their Fare Thee Well tour, we partnered with Bob and his family to get vegan hot dogs sold inside of major venues like Soldier Field in Chicago. So that was another part of our history with the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. And those more recent shows, the shows, I guess, specifically at the Sphere, I mean, what felt the same about those Dead shows and what felt different about them compared to your earlier sojourns with them?
I think what felt the same was the welcoming community. That was always the case around the Grateful Dead, and sort of the presence of people wanting to share time and ideas with each other. So that was beautiful. I'd say what was different is that there are now next generations of Deadheads coming up. So you had, you know, parents and their kids at some of the more recent shows. So I think that would be the main kind of different thing that I observed.
And you talked about earlier the sort of hippie ethos that Bob sort of reflected. And did you feel over time, and especially in this recent reuniting of at the shows, that there was sort of a farm sanctuary ethos intersecting with the Grateful Dead ethos?
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, I think that's been the case since our beginning at Farm Sanctuary. It's really about community. It's about learning from each other. It's about kindness. That was a very important thing that Bob pointed out to me when I interviewed him about, you know, the success of the Grateful Dead. It was really about empathy and listening to other bandmates and then kind of supporting each other and riffing off of each other. And as human beings, and, you know, with our work at Farm Sanctuary, we want to learn from each other. And we also want to learn from other animals and recognize the consciousness and the emotional lives that these other animals experience. And by doing that, I think it just enriches our own lives.
For sure. And it seemed like Bob was just, by all accounts, just a really great guy and really had sort of a great manner and philosophy about all kinds of things, and just even where how he played and how he wanted to play within the band, how that extended to just functioning with people and animals. I mean, it was all part of a piece with him.
Absolutely. No, he was a very compassionate, wise person, and he was like kind of a guru on one end and then a, you know, free spirit musician on the other end.
Yeah, great combination for sure. So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Gene Bauer, co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, now marking its 40th anniversary. And Farm Sanctuary could be considered really the granddaddy of farmed animal sanctuaries that have popped up all kinds of places across this country and other countries, really, for that matter, and certainly an exemplar of such facilities. If you'd like to ask Gene a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. I mentioned in the introduction just now, a moment ago, and I think we've discussed this a bit in one or more of our previous conversations, but it does feel timely again to address this within part of acknowledging the 40th anniversary. So over the years, an enormous number of farmed animal sanctuaries have popped up across the country. To what extent do these sanctuaries feel like your, let's say, progeny?
Well, to some extent, some of them are. We have had many interns and volunteers who have come and worked at Farm Sanctuary over the years, and some of them have gone on to found their own farm sanctuary. So I think that's sort of the closest progeny in a way of saying it. But each of these is their own organization, and they're individuals doing their own work, which we support. And there's, you know, human beings are social animals, and we see other people do things, and then we might choose to do the same thing. So I think with the farm sanctuary movement, you know, we were the first, but, you know, each time there are new farm sanctuaries and other people see the work and recognize that this is something that feels meaningful and positive, other farm sanctuaries often spring from new farm sanctuaries. So, you know, we are social animals. It's people see, people do. We learn from those around us. So the more sanctuaries there are, the more there will be, you know, because
for
people
sure
see this. So it's become kind of a movement, and there are now hundreds, if not thousands, around the world. And I think they all kind of come from the same basic ethos, which is to care for animals who are among the most abused on the planet. And different sanctuaries may do things a little bit differently, but the basic core tenet that farm animals matter, they deserve compassion, you know, goes throughout all of them.
Yeah. And do you, when you travel around, do you feel inclined to visit some of these farm sanctuaries that have popped up in the wake of farm sanctuary itself?
Yeah, absolutely. I love visiting other farm sanctuaries. And when I travel now, especially, I'm making a point to visit with people at other sanctuaries.
And, you know, we've each kind of referred to like the monumental number of them. Is there any way to actually tally the number that exists across this country, if not beyond? Or is it just sort of so enormous that it's just kind of hard to wrap a number around?
It, you know, it's pretty hard to say what the exact number is, but it's definitely hundreds in this country. Yeah. And I know of sanctuaries all over the world. So I'm guessing we're probably over 1,000 by now, but there's no real kind of formalized tracking of it. So it's very hard to say for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned that some came from people that interned or did other worked in other capacities at Farm Sanctuary itself. I imagine some of these other ones maybe have sought your counsel on one issue or another as they were getting started or getting launched, or maybe after getting launched, maybe they hit some kind of issue that they thought, hey, maybe we should see what Gene Bauer could advise us on this.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we've been doing this for many years, and many newer sanctuaries have come to us and asked for advice and ideas about how to care for the animals properly, also just how to operate as a nonprofit organization. And you know, I'm now very interested in trying to talk with other sanctuaries about creating sustainable models, because sometimes sanctuaries have difficulty financially because they take in animals. And each time you bring in new animals, you have a commitment, and it sometimes can get pretty expensive. So we want to try to develop sustainable financial models for sanctuaries so that they're less at risk of, you know, going out of business, which has happened to some.
Sure.
So it's I think, really important for sanctuaries to work together to learn from each other, and ultimately to create models that work and can be replicated.
Yeah, I think that would make a huge difference over time, because certainly just over a number of years of doing this show, interviewing people who have sanctuaries or comparable organizations, one of the big issues is being able to pay the bills and keep the animals fed and vet care, and it's often just battling against numbers, and some of them, as you say, just can't sustain it, and they have to, unfortunately, fold. So I would think that's one of the reasons I thought it was interesting, besides the Grateful Dead element, to talk about. Because it sounded like early on you guys recognized, hey, we've got to figure out a way to pay the bills, and we can't be struggling right from the get-go. And so I guess the vegan hot dogs at the Grateful Dead show just seemed like one really great solution to that.
Yeah, those were really helpful back in the 1980s. You know, thankfully, since then, we've been very fortunate to have support of thousands of people around the country who believe in the work we're doing. And so, you know, we're a nonprofit organization and survive largely on charitable donations. But I also believe that, you know, we have opportunities to do more in terms of our hospitality operation. You know, we have overnight accommodations at the sanctuary, for example, that can generate income. We have a retail operation where we have a gift shop. And we have now also a vegan cafe at our sanctuary in Watkins Glen, New York. And all of these present opportunities to generate income in addition to the charitable donations we receive.
And I'm sure at least some of those provide great models, as you say, for other sanctuaries to try to emulate and help with their own fundraising and keep plugging away.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, sanctuary work is very important and very meaningful, but, you know, especially because it's very difficult, it's increasingly difficult, it seems, to find veterinarians. You know, those are challenges and expenses. And so we just want to make sure we can create a sustainable model. Also want to try to work with veterinary schools to encourage more people to learn about caring for farm animals and to do it in a way that is sensitive. Because too often what happens in veterinary school is that you have people that want to become veterinarians, they go to veterinary school, but oftentimes the courses they take are desensitizing and they make students do things that are not very kind to animals. I studied at Cornell University. I got a master's there in agricultural economics, and I was in some animal science classes, and I saw, you know, just how sensitive veterinary students are desensitized or actually leave because they're required to do things that they don't want to do. You know, things like mutilating animals, cutting the tails off of pigs, and many other things.
Dissecting, I guess, is part of their studies. Seems like it was and probably still is a part of the curriculum at many places.
Yes, yes. So these are the kinds of cultural norms that are instilled in veterinarians now. And so they're not as sensitive to farm animals as they should be, in my opinion.
Do you feel like there's some headway being made in that regard? I mean, it sounds like something that's sort of systemic almost at a lot of vet schools, so it's probably tough to implement change there.
No, that's exactly right. It is systemic. And, you know, veterinary schools get significant funding from the factory farming interests, equipment manufacturers, pharmaceutical manufacturers, the petrochemical industry. But there are some vet schools that do have a more forward-looking perspective. There's one I'm aware of in California called Western, which is, you know, much more sympathetic to bigger conversations about our relationships with animals, whereas most veterinary schools are still stuck in this idea that the animals are here for us to use, and there's not a whole lot of sensitivity to the sentience and the lived experiences of non-human animals.
Isn't that sort of wild and kind of disappointing in its wildness that people that are drawn to, in theory, helping and saving and preserving the lives of animals, whether it wouldn't necessarily have gone down that path, or so you'd think, would be troubling in the regards that we're discussing right now? It just seems like just sort of philosophically almost a disconnect that you just wouldn't expect, especially maybe these days, maybe over the years, you would think there would be a course correct there, so to speak. And I guess it sounds like it's minimal places like this Western that you cited. I mean, that's great, but it sounds like there's not enough Westerns out there.
No, that is true. And it's a system, you know, and animal agriculture is a system connected to certain interests. And one of their interests is in veterinarians who don't really speak up about cruelty to animals. You know, we for many years tried to convince the American Veterinary Medical Association to adopt basic humane policies with regard to animals. And there was a very strong pushback by agribusiness, you know, who puts a lot of money into veterinary schools. So that's part of the systemic problem, and it is very tough to see individuals who do care about animals, who want to be veterinarians. In many cases, they end up leaving because they cannot put up with the insensitivity that's expected of them.
Wow. Has that been a call to kind of shift or expand at least some of the advocacy work that you and other notable farm sanctuary organizations do?
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the things that we're looking at and hoping to make some progress with. But we're up against a big machine. And yeah. You know, we're also trying to change, you know, federal policies regarding our food system. You know, right now, billions and billions of dollars are going into subsidizing the factory farming industry, which is why, you know, hamburgers and other fast foods, animal products are so cheap because of the subsidies. So what we're also trying to do is shift government subsidies and investments away from the factory farming industry towards plant-based agriculture. And so there's a lot of systemic challenges we're facing in the veterinary profession in terms of the kinds of lessons and the culture that is instilled, a culture of insensitivity, but also with our food system, where animal agriculture gets preferential access to government money, but also to scarce resources like water and land and fossil fuels. And they often pay below market value for these items. And then when factory farms pollute the environment and cause harm to ecosystems, government money again starts to clean up the messes that factory farms are creating. So this is an industry that has not been held accountable, and that needs to change as well. So there's a lot of systemic issues that we're facing, and it can be pretty daunting to try to change policies and laws and big institutions. But the good news is that each of us every day can make choices that have a do make a difference, and that is, you know, choosing to eat more plants and stay away from animal products, especially factory farmed meat, dairy, and eggs. And so I think it's important for us, whenever we can, to vote with our dollars and to support a food system that we can feel good about, instead of the factory farming system with, you know, nobody likes it really, you know. And oftentimes when you raise the idea of what happens to animals in factory farms, people say, don't tell me, I don't want to know. But I don't think that's a really good or responsible answer. I think it's important for us to see what we're doing, to be responsible and accountable for our behavior, and then ultimately to make choices that we can feel good about instead of trying to ignore the reality of what we're supporting.
And I think on a related note, Gene, that the so-called ag-gag laws that have popped up, which basically prevent activists and others, journalists, media types, whatever, from documenting what goes on at factory farming operations, photographing, videotaping, whatever, speaks to that very issue that you mentioned, because if you don't have proof of what goes on there, it'd be very easy to dismiss and just kind of keep doing what you're doing. But if you saw some of the more egregious things that do go on, you'd get your attention firmly and loudly, I think, at that point, and maybe you'd actually consider making some changes where you could otherwise sort of say, well, not today.
That's exactly right. You know, the industry has a very strong interest in preventing consumers from seeing the reality of what is happening to animals in the factory farming industry. And it's been going on for decades. You know, I don't know if you recall, this was a while back, but when Oprah Winfrey, you know, had Howard Lyman on her show, and he's a former cattle rancher turned vegan activist, and he talked about what happens in the beef industry. They got sued. You know, Oprah got sued by the beef industry, and she actually had to go to Texas to defend herself, and she filmed her show from Texas for a while because the industry did not want her talking about the reality of animal agriculture. And so this is an industry that is very concerned about people learning what is happening to animals, and also the other harms that animal agriculture causes to the planet, to communities near these factory farms. The good news is, you know, again, we can each make choices about what we eat that can make a world of difference, not only for our own health and well-being, but for other animals and the earth.
And another sort of valuable point about this huge expansion over the years of the number of farm animal sanctuaries in the wake of farm sanctuary itself is that you're sending out any number of advocates that are can address these issues and address them directly from their own sanctuary and have knowledge. And there's just that many more people speaking on these important issues, which obviously that's to make any inroads what's essential.
Absolutely. You know, the more we can do and the more we can do to support other sanctuaries and just people who care and who want to live it more consciously and more mindfully, that we want to do that. And then again, we rub off on those around us. If, you know, most of us, myself included, grew up eating animal products because everybody around me was eating animal products. As I learned what was happening to animals and to the earth and how I didn't need to eat meat, dairy, or eggs to be healthy, I went vegan back in 1985. And, you know, each of us learns from those around us. So the more vegans there are speaking to other people and providing information and support for more compassionate choices, I think that helps enable more people to make the choice not to support factory farming and to eat more plant products, to buy more organic, more local food, to go to farmers markets, to get involved in community-supported agriculture programs. There's even a whole Food Not Lawns movement where people are growing food instead of lawns. And I think that's another great way where we could feed more people in communities where food, healthy food is lacking. So there's a lot of interventions and innovations that are happening now.
Yeah.
There's also a whole movement towards plant-based meat. And, you know, you go to mainstream grocery stores now, and there's alternatives to beef that are all plant-based. You also have lots of alternatives to cow's milk, plant-based alternatives to cow's milk. You can even go to Burger King and get an Impossible Whopper, which is a vegan burger if you get it without the mayonnaise. So it's becoming more accessible, which is great. But each of us has, you know, can make choices every day that can make a difference.
For sure. Well, I'm going to follow up with some questions on that, but I think we have a caller that would like to get involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Jean Bauer.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and say I have found this interview very informative, and I will be making a donation both to Talking Animals show and to the Farm Sanctuary. I was just a kid, sounds like, when your organization started, Gene, but it's just been extremely informative. And I really appreciate the language you're using, because I am not fully vegan, but I think I was born a vegetarian. I've always not liked meat, fish, or anything else that was living. But I sometimes struggle with the language. And I really appreciate you said encouraging people to make more compassionate choices. So thank you so much for your organization.
Can I ask you a quick question before you go? So when you say struggle with the language, is it because sometimes it's more charged or incendiary when there's a parallel conversation to the one Gene and I are having?
Yes. Judgmental would be the word I'd use.
Okay. Yeah, I got gotcha.
So he's not sounding judgmental, and I'm learning from that. So thank you.
Well, that's great. Well, I appreciate your comment. Thanks for calling.
Uh-huh.
You know, thank you very much for calling in and for sharing those sentiments. I really appreciate that. One of Farm Sanctuary's most important values is that we want to empathize and understand people, and we want to speak to people in ways that make sense. We speak to people where they are on their own journeys. And, you know, all of us are works in progress. Even the most vegan is not perfect. None of us is perfect. So we each learn as we go, and we just try to do better as we learn more.
Yeah, and as the caller noted, the less judgmental people are in any kind of exchange about what they're going through or what they're considering, the more progress that can really be made. Those are kind of blockades typically to progress.
I completely agree. I think when people feel judged, they shut down. And that makes it difficult for people to be curious and to be open to learning. So I think curiosity is important. I think most people are humane. And I think most people do want to live in a way that they can feel good about. And so it's part of our job is just to create the opportunities for conversations that can lead to positive steps forward.
So, Gene, when you glance ahead, what does the future of Farm Sanctuary look like? Is there a plan in place for certain changes or new policies to be implemented? Or where are you looking out for the next year, two or three from where we are here at the 40th anniversary?
Yeah, well, at Farm Sanctuary, we have three pillars. One is rescue, where we rescue animals from cruelty and let them live out their lives at our sanctuaries. We do educational work to raise awareness about the food system and about ways that we can live more compassionately and about the other animals we share this planet with. You know, most people have never gotten to meet a cow or a pig or a chicken, and we want people to recognize that these animals have feelings, they have memories, they have relationships, and they want to enjoy life just like all other animals. So that's part of our education work, talking about the cruelty of factory farming and who farm animals are and why it makes sense to treat them with more kindness. And then we have advocacy work as well, where we try to change laws and policies to prevent the abuses of factory farming. And so this is where we're passing law. We've passed some laws to prevent the confinement of animals in cages and crates so tightly that they can't even turn around. And by the way, the first such law in the U.S. was passed in Florida in 2002. It was Amendment 10 that was on the ballot to ban gestation crates, which are 2-foot wide enclosures where pigs are kept during their, these are mother pigs during their pregnancies are kept in these gestation crates. And so we were able to ban those in Florida. And there's about 10 states now that have similar laws banning that inhumane form of confinement. But that's our advocacy work, where we try to stop certain cruel practices, and we're trying to shift government subsidies and supports away from the factory farming industry to a community-oriented plant-based food system.
Well, that sounds great. Well, in a moment, I want to see if you wouldn't mind touching on, kind of a sneak preview of the talk you'll be giving in Tampa later this month on February 22. But one other question on the sort of follow-up to what we just were discussing. How would you characterize the biggest changes Farm Sanctuary have made in recent years, just one or two notable changes that you feel like have really made a difference to the organization?
I think, you know, we've always done the same three pillars: rescue, education, and advocacy. And I would say in the last year or two, we've really come to recognize the importance of supporting other sanctuaries and understanding what challenges other sanctuaries have. So that's been a significant new focus, plus a reinvestment in our advocacy work to change systems. Because unless we change systems, it's going to be very hard to prevent the suffering that billions of animals currently experience.
Yeah. All right. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I've been speaking with Gene Bauer, a co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, who's celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. I invite you to join the conversation in our final minutes, if you'd like, by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So as I've noted, on February 22nd, right here in Tampa, you're slated to deliver a talk at the Florida Voices for Animals 31st Annual Have a Heart for the Animals Awards Dinner Fundraiser. The title of your talk is Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food. So is there a little bit of a sneak preview you can give? I mean, obviously people should be there and catch the whole talk, but is there anything that you want to just tease it with a little bit?
Well, I'll just talk a little bit about the work we do at Farm Sanctuary, which includes animal rescue and some animal stories. It will describe, you know, conditions that exist in factory farms and the consequences of our animal-based food system. And then I'll talk about things people can do to make a difference, you know, similar to what I've been talking about here, but I'll go into more detail during the talk there in Tampa.
That sounds great. So we're just about at the end of our time here, Gene, but I'm curious, these 40 years that we've been referring to, obviously, as part of the anniversary, have they gone fast for you or slow or sometimes both?
Different. Some days go fast and some days go slow. So yeah, it really depends. But I just feel very fortunate to do something that I believe in, that I believe is meaningful. And I'm just very grateful to do it with such an amazing community of people who care. So that makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, we only have probably a minute now left, but I did want to at least just mention briefly in passing, because many folks may be unaware that there's a whole research element to Farm Sanctuary. Can you talk just very briefly about kind of some of that research or what it aims to research?
Yeah, what we want to do is just show people that farm animals have much more complex emotional and cognitive lives than most people assume. And, you know, Jane Goodall has talked about this for years. Also, there was recently a study that was published that talked about a cow using a tool, you know, because for many generations.
Oh, yeah, scratching. I forget her name.
Right.
She had a great name. It was like Catherine or something.
Or Veronica.
Yeah. Veronica, that's right. Yeah, I love the name. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's been this idea that humans are different than other animals, and we've said we're the only species that uses tools. That was one of the things that we thought differentiated us. And then Jane Goodall, by spending time with chimpanzees, recognized that they were using tools as well and had much more complex social lives than we ever imagined. And farm animals also have much more complex social lives and emotional lives than we know. So at Farm Sanctuary, we want to be able to elevate those individuals and those lives and help people empathize and understand farm animals better.
That sounds great. Well, Gene, I think we have reached the end of our time, but we've been speaking with Gene Bauer, again, co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary. The website is farmsanctuary.org, where you can find out more about what we've been discussing and some of the things we didn't get a chance to discuss. Gene, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals today, and thanks for 40 years of great, great work for us on behalf of our animal friends.
Thank you, Duncan. It's always great talking with you.
Thanks so much. In a moment, I'll speak with Jason Cowan of Boyd Hill Nature Preserve, gearing up for its annual Raptor Fest happening at the preserve this Saturday, February 7th. We'll hear all about that, what's on tap. And Jason joins us in a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Right now, though, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with a piece from Kevin Nealon, talking partly about cows, which seems fitting today. Here's Kevin Nealon with a piece called Cows on the Roof in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Most animals are smart, though, you know. I remember during the tsunami in Sri Lanka, I read about this. The animals, they have like a sixth sense. They knew it was coming, and they took off for the hills the day before it happened. They all survived. They didn't tell anybody else. They kept it a secret. But come on, just us. Come on. Keep it quiet. Move it along. Let's go. But I have a whole newfound respect for animals now. I give them a lot more credit. In fact, now when I see a dog chasing a car, I will chase that car too. Oh, yeah. Animals are something. I rescued a couple of cats not long ago. Hey, do your cats throw up all night long? Is that what they do? Is that the M.O.? I mean, all night long, all I heard was, whoa! And I wake up in the morning, and there is puke everywhere. It's like living in a fraternity house or something. You know, it's just crazy. And you know what? Not even puke. They're hairballs. And I know that because I sifted through it with a little stick. A couple of berries, but mostly hair. Mostly hair. Yeah. And you got to get it off the carpet quick, otherwise it stains. You've got to make a decision. Either get them off or let them accumulate and become like a sticky shag carpet after a while. Animals are smart. That's all I'm going to say. I watch the Weather Channel. They always show the floods in the Midwest, right? And they show the cow up on the roof, you know, surrounded by water. I don't know how she gets up there. I guess she comes up the stairs, I guess. Do they have stairs in a barn? I don't know. I don't know. She comes up the stairs, crawls out the window, grapples up to the roof, just waits it out. They should show that. They should show that. Maybe they should have the Cow Network. I'd watch the Cow Network. But even here in California, you know, the animals warn you before an earthquake. They'll start barking like crazy. The dogs, you know, the cats will hide under the cars. You just have to know the signals, what to look for. Okay, like if you live in the Midwest, right, and you're going down the stairs and there's a cow coming up the other way, you get the boots. You get the boots. It's common sense. Look at the guy in the back. Check him out. Check him out. What's he doing? But I'll tell you what's funny. No, seriously. Seriously. No, seriously. No, the guy in the back. The guy in the back.
That was Kevin Nealon in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called Cows on the Roof, taken from his album titled Now Hear Me Out. Now it's time to speak with Jason Cowan to get the scoop on this year's Raptor Fest, welcoming Jason Cowan back to Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Jason.
How's it going?
Great. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals again.
Yeah, of course.
So, for those who may not be familiar, let's start by maybe asking you to present a bit of an overview of Boyd Hill Nature Preserve. What is it? How long has it been around? And so on.
Yep, so Boyd Nature Preserve is a City of St. Petersburg-owned preserve, part of the Parks and Rec Department in South St. Pete on the backside of Lake McGorry. It's, you know, 6 miles of hiking trails, different habitats, and a lot of acreage of preserve land. And been around since the, as a preserve or a park in some capacity since the 40s. And it's been very well known for its bird of prey program since the late 80s.
Wow, that's a great history there for sure. So Raptor Fest is an annual event there, quite an extravaganza, taking place this Saturday, February 7th, starting around 10 a.m., I believe. So what all will happen? Give us some highlights, what things are on tap for Raptor Fest this Saturday.
Yeah, so those of you that don't know, a raptor is a bird of prey, like hawks, eagles, falcons, owls. So it's basically a big festival celebrating our local raptors. So we have our own bird of prey program at Boyd Hill. We also bring in other people that have their own raptors from around the area. So you'll see a lot of exhibitors that are from the area that have, you know, those kinds of animals, tabling with up-close encounters available. And we also have a master falconer, Steve Hottie from EarthQuest, that comes down. He actually free flies some of his raptors for the audience. So we actually have like a big field set up with bleachers. He does 3 demos during the event and shows you how to actually, you know, fly free flighted.
That sounds very cool. And I think I read some of those bird walks too.
There'll be bird walks at 11 and 1 o'clock. They're very beginner friendly. So, you know, everything at Raptor Fest is designed to be, you know, it's geared towards anyone from, like, you know, a real enthusiast that already loves birds or people that are new to the idea of it. You know, you don't have to feel like, you know, you can go on the bird walk as a total beginner and they'll teach you things about it. And hopefully you'll come back for a future one down the road.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of activities for all ages, it sounds like, including that. And one thing I was wondering about, and I was thinking about our conversation this morning earlier, do you occasionally run into folks who are afraid of raptors?
There are people that are. I assume that they probably don't come to Raptor Fest. I have not met at the actual event that's scared of them. But at the preserve we have, certainly.
Yeah, because I would almost think that somebody, if they had the right attitude, could go to Raptor Fest to sort of help get over their fear just because they learn so much and see that whatever's kind of bothering them or making them anxious, maybe.
Could. Again, all the birds are leashed except for the ones in the free flight show. So you can kind of decide how close you want to get to them.
Yeah.
So it's not like a theme park, crazy exotic breeded animals. It's very local, mostly native, mostly rescue birds, can't be released. So it's not like the birds are going to, be interacting with you personally. They're just there. They're trying to be there on the glove of their handlers.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it's great. And it sounds like it's, as you kind of noted, for all levels of interest and comfort with raptors, Raptor Fest has one or more things for everybody across that spectrum.
Definitely.
And tell me about what's Raptor Raffle. That sounds cool.
Yeah, so we have 12 raffle baskets available. Tickets are on sale even now at the Preserve. You can go, arrive, today, tomorrow, Friday, or during the event and purchase raffle tickets. There's a lot of locally created baskets. People will donate items to local businesses, from breweries to artists with art, books and all kinds of unique things. And basically at the end of the event, we draw winners for those items.
That sounds great. Wow. So let's go through some of the details. This is an event that's what we call unticketed. We're not allowed to talk about prices on the air here at WMNF, but
yeah,
basically
correct.
It's a very reasonable price, let's put it that way. Yep. But here I think one thing that's crucial for people who might be interested in checking it out, can you talk a little bit about the parking information? Because that sounds like that's kind of significant.
The most important thing is that, we are a preserve that's not designed to handle these kinds of events very often. So parking for most people is going to be at Lakewood High School or Lake Vista Rec Center. There's a free trolley service to drive you to the event space. If you have a handicap pass, you may park on site in our parking lot, but only with a pass.
Okay, so everyone else should expect to take the shuttle and just...
Yeah, and they should plan, time-wise. It's a very busy event, so if you want to be at the event in time for one of the shows, give yourself plenty of time to get there from one of those spots. You are also welcome to legally park at other places and walk in, but the sanctioned areas are going to be Lakewood High School and Lake Vista Rec Center.
All right, well, this sounds
and
good.
Carpooling is encouraged and so are bicycles.
I'm sure, yeah. Carpooling is probably the smartest thing you could do on a day like that.
Definitely.
So, all right, and people could, one way to find out more information, you just search Raptor Fest 2026 and all kinds of entries come up.
Yeah, raptorfest.org and also any friends of Boyd Hill social media will have very up to date information as well as St. Pete Parks and Rec.
Well, this is great. Well, this has been Jason Cowan, Executive Director of Boyd Hill. Nature Preserve, sorry about Raptor Fest coming up again this Saturday, February 7th, starting at 10 a.m. and running till 4 p.m., if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Okay, well, great. Thanks for joining us and good luck on the event. Sounds like it's going to be fantastic once again. Thank you, Jason.
Bye-bye.
Coming up on WMNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WMNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Wall, holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C, hosting a traffic jam from 3 to 6 p.m. And then just more great music here on 885 WMNF throughout the rest of the day and evening. So, meanwhile, on this show, at the moment, as a prize for naming that animal tune, I'll be offering something from the Talking Animals Vault, full of all kinds of cool trinkets and gifts. The first person goes 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this tune, the same animal tune on Talking Animals on WMNF. Guesses for Name That Animal Tune off the air after we finish up the show, because we have just about reached the tail end of Talking Animals for today. want to thank Gene Bauer and Jason Callen for joining us today for great conversations about various topics, for sure. So, hope you'll join us next Wednesday for another edition of Talking Animals. You can also visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are available there too, as well as other podcast platforms. Also links to our social media pages. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals headquarters. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. I hope you'll help support our show, Talking Animals, in advance of the fund drive coming up 2 weeks from today. Anything we can get in advance helps us make that goal a formidable goal it is. So please stick a few bucks in the basket for us. We'd really appreciate it. Talking at WNF.org. And just donate here is the button you're looking for. Stay tuned for the conversation coming up tomorrow, Nunez after NPR News and The Scoop, and more great programming after that here on 88.5 WMNF, Talking Animals, signing off for now. Thanks.